You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Welcome to episode 72 of Ravens Weekly, proudly sponsored by our friends at QPM Group. Big thank you to them for their continued support. Big shout out to Howard and the team. As ever, appreciated. As ever, I'm joined by Matt.
Hello.
James.
Hello.
And Cookie.
Hello.
We're also going to welcome Ash at some point onto this podcast episode. We'll find out why shortly. Who's going to kick us off? Cookie?
Hello.
It's that time of the year, isn't it?
What's that?
Oh my god.
Supporters player of the year.
Yes.
It's going so well. Supporters player of the year obviously is something that takes place in the last few home games. At the football club, unfortunately, without any games to play for the last month or so, it's been done online. So the best way the fans can go about it, if you haven't already, go to bromleyfc.co.uk, where you'll have information and a list of players you can vote for. But with that, basically, you'll pick, each fan is allowed one vote each. You know the team's on the website of who you can select, and you need to send it to a new email address created specifically for this, which is spots@bromleyfc.co.uk. That's spots@bromleyfc.co.uk. Don't send it to info. Don't send it to our personal email addresses that some people have. The only email address to send your vote to is spots@bromleyfc.co.uk. And then they'll all go into the email, and then obviously the winner will be selected and announced at the presentation evening.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I think there's been almost 300 votes over there already. So a big thank you to everybody who's voted so far. I'm sure there's plenty more to come in by the time we do get around to the awards. On the note of the awards, we are, as we referred to last week, attempting a virtual awards via video. We've had a bit of an internal rehearsal, and it sort of worked, and we're going to be testing it next week, early next week as well, and I believe we're going to announce over the weekend when it's actually taking place, hopefully the end of next week. But again, just check out the website for further details on that. In other news, Matt, the 100 club draw, obviously a record draw for April and May, looks to be the biggest yet.
Yes, well, of course, the club recently launched the Target 500 scheme, in which case I think we'd have to change it to the 500 plus club, which is an outstanding achievement. I remember just a couple of years ago when it went from the 100 club to the 100 plus club. So to now have over 350 actual numbers in the draw, comprising of 157 individuals doing that, is absolutely fantastic. So it's really, really great to see that. And a big thank you to everyone who's supported it in these really strange times and actually realised what a great way it is to give something back to the football club and continue to support us at the moment with no football going on. And of course, massively, again, thank you to John and Arthur, who continue to work on the 100 plus club in these times from home as well. So the important thing to note from this one is, obviously the draw takes place each month on what would have been the last Saturday home game of each month. You must make sure your payments are in by the 10th of every month. So for this month, it will be the 10th of May. I think about 300 of the 350 have gone through at the moment. So just double check if you have joined us recently or if you're a longer standing member, and make sure that yours has gone through. And I think that the prize in this month's draw is going to be yet another record, because more and more people just keep joining. It's fantastic to see. And once again, huge thank you to everybody who supported that. We're getting ever closer now to our target of 500.
Absolutely brilliant. I'm going to try and use the power of technology now to bring in Mash. I tried it once while you were talking. Not 100% confident. while we're doing that, Matt James, or something, want to talk us through what Mash has been doing over on Twitter with the, is it the greatest Bromley team?
Yeah, I think he's been setting up a poll every few days, running through various positions. So obviously starting from goalkeeper, and today I think he's almost at the conclusion of picking the two strikers for the team. So this is the greatest ever Bromley team. I think he's used the word greatest for a reason. He's often said in his tweets that it may not necessarily be the best, but the greatest player in each position. So maybe someone who's a bit more of a cult hero, or someone who just, you know, made a moment of magic that's obviously helped Bromley to progress to where it is today. So yeah, the team's slowly been building up, and I think today he's almost at the last vote for the strikers. And the team that has come together so far is one heck of a team.
It's created so much interaction as well, hasn't it, amongst fans new and old, and it's been really, really interesting to see the different opinions that are flying about and actually how difficult the choices are.
Yeah, I must have thought, because what's the latest one? It's now down to the, I think, once we get, I'm trying, it's down to the two forwards, isn't it? There was eight in total to choose from, to narrow it down to this original four, and then to narrow it down again to two. Who are the last four? Who are the remaining?
Four that are remaining to pick from. So in this striker vote, the top two will be picked, and out of the four, you can have either Nick McDonnell, Bradley Goldberg, Moses Emmanuel, or Michael Cheek. So yeah, very difficult.
That's really tough, isn't it?
For everyone there. I will quickly just look on the voting to see how it's standing. I think it's all very even, to be honest. I think it's going to be very tricky to...
And it's incredible. I know Mash will probably cover it. It's obviously different generations. Some fans have only been here the last 10 years or so. Some fans 20 years, 30 years, 40 years.
But don't forget, in the past, it's been in the past, two, 3 years that we've seen a good... a fantastic increase of crowds. I mean, this season I know that we was averaging over 2,000, wasn't we? So a mixture, like you said, of new and old, and it's brilliant to see how versatile people actually are with their choices, because you've got the old school that will probably do more Nick McDonald, etc. What's that?
I think he's just about to connect, hopefully. I was just going to say, I don't even know what the final 10 were so far, like the winners of each one. Hopefully Mash will know.
Oh, there he is.
Here we go. We've got a video.
He's connected to audio.
Yeah, what's up?
Hello, that's all right.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Hey, look, technology actually works.
Have you already started?
Oh, yeah, you're live. There's 300 people watching. we were just running through. Just a bit of background, really, on this, on the voting and the poll and how it all came about. Hopefully, you can explain it a bit better than we've just tried to.
Yeah, so what basically happened is that I was bored. it was at the start. It was near the beginning of the lockdown, and I was like, right, we should be out of this thing in about, 5 weeks? So I was like, let me do the most long-winded Bromley FC poll of all time. And by the time it's finished, lockdown will be over. Little did I know. So basically, I think I just set some parameters for it. Because I think a lot of football clubs were kind of doing this thing around the turn of the year when it got to 2020. And they're like, the decade and all that type of stuff. And I was trying to work out a parameter that would allow the general kind of Bromley fan base to vote on it. So from like your Roys, who've seen us through the, and your Dave Roberts, who would have seen us and teams in the 60s all the way through to today. So I kind of set the parameter as like anybody from like the 1960s onwards. But obviously, based on the results, it's been anybody from the 1990s onwards, because that reflects who's on Twitter, basically. So from there, all I basically did was, as I'm sure you've explained, is that for each position, I just put out to Twitter. I should have done it on Facebook, come to think of it, as well. But put out on social media, nominate. And then I just kept a tally of all the nominations that kept coming in. And then from there, picking a top four, if it was one position, or eight, if it was two, like centre-backs, strikers. And then just letting people have their fun.
I was going to say, that's where we are at the moment, aren't we? We're on the last two positions, the two forwards. And that was obviously split into two halves originally.
Yeah, into like a Group A, Group B. And then it's interesting because some of the positions have had more involvement than others. Left back was clear cut.
Yeah.
And didn't really need to happen.
Has there been any that surprised you, Mash, that have gone in?
You know what? Loads of people have got emotional about this, you know.
I was going to say, we're having this conversation, I was saying, when it started, I thought, okay, yeah, there's different generations, there's going to be different, we've all seen different players in our time, etc. So I thought, this is going to be really interesting to see how it's pan out. And then you started seeing the first few comments coming through, just from people that were a bit, okay. To be fair, it's carried on throughout, from everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of glad that no one can actually see me or come to discuss with me. because I keep having, like, and it's actually got to the point where some players are jumping on.
Yeah,
where am I?
Anthony Cook, Blair Turgot.
So, and the thing is, literally, I've had nothing to do with it other than just looking at nominations and putting names down. It's not like I chose who was going to be in each category.
I think you've done pretty well with the actual nominations themselves. Have you had any fans, more than just the one fan, have a moan up about someone that's not been included at all whatsoever, or have you thought, I've missed off someone there, or?
Trying to think who. So actually, when Blair kind of raised it, I thought he's got a point there. I was surprised he didn't feature in the final four of one. But what it's shown when fans have kind of said, "Where's this player?" is how many good players have been over the last X number of years. I felt sorry for like players from the 60s and 70s who were good, and you look at the stats and it's good, but we just don't have enough fans who would have been there and or kind of really thing at the rooftops about how good they were.
Well, Jerry's not happy that he's not on there.
Oh, there was one nomination for him.
Was it him?
yeah, was it him?
But I'm trying to think. I think there was centre mid. Actually, Peter Adonai missed out, which was, people put him at right midfield, and I would have said he was a centre midfielder. Louis nearly didn't get in, as in nearly didn't win. I think
to recap us, where are we up to? What have we got so far? Nine.
Yeah, so it's just so as we're speaking right now, we're on the strikers. And obviously it's two from four. So the last time I checked it, based on what was happening, it was going to be Nick and Moses. But I was anything could happen.
Blimey. Mm. Who are the actual nine so far?
Who's the what?
Who are the nine so far that everyone's voted for in each position?
Oh, the players so far. Sorry. So in goal was Alan Julian. Right back was. Oh my God, I can't remember.
His name was Luke, was it?
Luke, yes. Actually, that one caused issues as well because people were kind of like, he's too recent and others should have got it. But anyways, Wolfenden was right back, Sam Wood left back, Paul Edwards and Jack Holland, centre backs, Gareth McCleary right wing, Louis Dennis left wing, Frank Coles and Danny Waldron, centre mid. And now we're on the strikers. But because there's been so much engagement over it, I think I won't even stop at strikers. I'm going to go all the way through. It might even have to include backroom staff. So what are you fours going to have to go?
It'll be me.
Oh, are you still there, Kurt?
I'm normally gone by now.
I saw, was it Roy Oliver on Twitter was suggesting the old subs bench as well?
Yeah, so I'm going to do that. I wasn't originally. So I think the plan, what I'm going to do for the subs bench is all the, like, top second places across right back, centre back and left back. So one defender, one midfielder and one striker, just to just keep it going, because it looks like not going anywhere anytime soon.
You're going to do a manager with it.
Yeah, exactly. And then people started messaging me saying, are you going to do manager as well? Which I kind of did before.
Yeah.
Now that I've, now it's kind of got a bit bigger. So
off that, assistant manager, coach, kit man, physio.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, so obviously because, Jeff, your title's general manager, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so I don't know how I'm going to do backroom, because obviously if I, like, you've all got your individual roles, so I'm going to have to just create one title. There's a one title. So the other thing I would say, quick shout out to Colin, though, because most of the descriptions that people read of the players, Colin's done them. And because he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of everyone. So if it's not like a modern player, so what I tend to do is I get the final four, then speak to Cole, and then Cole writes them up, and then I just edit slightly to try and fit it into 240 characters.
Brilliant. For those of you who don't know, Colin Head writes the TFT fanzine, which I remember one of the first things that, other than the programme, that I sort of remember, you know, buying and then getting a better understanding and off-record understanding of the club. And there's plenty of stories in the past in there I didn't understand, I couldn't work out the relation, etc. Then you got to know the people involved. And definitely someone will have to get on the podcast as well at some point, I think.
100%.
Like you say, it's not repeated. Knowledge. Fantastic. So for those fans unaware, Mash, where's the actual poll? I think we're retweeting it. It's on Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah, they just have to follow me. Or no, they don't have to follow me, just find me and then just vote. So if you go to, when Bromley have retweeted it, that makes it easier. Obviously, so just go to the Bromley handle. If you go to Mash ST Paddy or one thing, then you'll find the polls there. After tomorrow, it'll go to subs bench.
Okay, fantastic. How long? So we're hopefully this is going to go out tonight, Friday night. How long have they got to vote for their two forwards?
I think about 23 hours.
23 hours. There we go. While we've got you, Mash, obviously the season we know has ended purely from an outside of the bubble that we're all living in. Your thoughts on how to conclude the season, what you'd like to see, what you think will happen?
So you had Smudge on last week, and Smudge hit the nail on the head for me. First things first, I think the season should have ended ages ago, as in the decision. I obviously, you know more behind the scenes, but I thought this was inevitable, what was going to happen, and I couldn't work out why it was taking so long for the National League to realise what should happen. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens up the rest of the pyramid as well, apart from the Premier League. But in terms of the National League, I think the only obvious thing to do, to me, I personally wouldn't promote or relegate anyone other than Barrow, just because they already know that that Bury have gone bust. So Bury have to be replaced. So Barrow would be the obvious choice to replace Bury. And then the EFL can do whatever they want. But part of the problem as well is the National League kind of depends on what the EFL decide to do. So let's say the EFL decide to play their whatever, however many games they've got remaining, and they send two down. Then the National League has a problem. They have to send someone up with Barrow, don't they?
Yeah. It's a good job we're all together, actually, because we're going to bring this up later. But we're just going to try and clarify. There's a few things out there about the fact that clubs are going to be voting on this, and the clubs are going to have a say and everything like that. It's right, the clubs did have a vote with regards to the ending of the normal season. So we had the National League changed, made a rule amendment and asked the clubs to vote on it. Obviously, one of the clubs that are involved in the playoffs didn't want to vote on it because they wanted to know what the outcome was after that, because obviously this vote was just ending the normal league fixtures, which, to be honest, for most clubs, when you've got contracts, etc., at the end of the 2nd of May, all those sorts of things, it was something, like you say, Mash, people wanted to know a lot sooner in order to, you know, plan, etc. But now, all of the clubs, including ourselves, have been given this week to submit our observations or our views on how we think it should be concluded, how the season should be decided, etc. And then from there, apparently, we think it's the National League. We've got a board meeting on Tuesday. They're discussing it, and they're going to make a final decision. But their consultation with clubs is the fact they've asked us for an opinion. To be fair, the fact they've offered to vote for the ending of the normal season, that's a lot more, it's from the outside, it seems like a lot more engagement than Step 3 to Step 7 have had from, you know, those clubs as well. So you can sort of understand why the National League have done that. it's going to be really interesting to see what deciding. And I think there's a fear also within the National League that these two promotion places, the rules state that second place, the runner-up who gets promoted, has to have been decided via a playoff format. So the big concern is if the playoffs aren't being played and don't play, etc., don't happen, the EFL have every right to only accept one club from the National League. So, you know, and don't be wrong, it shouldn't, that doesn't have a knock-on effect for the following season. It shouldn't change it. It shouldn't mean the next season still only one club goes up. But just the fear of, I think some people are sitting out there going, maybe, second place will go up, etc. I don't actually think, you know, the rules as they are at the moment won't actually allow it. You know, there's no playoffs. There will be no second team. That's how it appears at the moment. So that's going to be really interesting one to pan out. From our point of view, you've got Harrogate sitting there, a 3G pitch. You can't help but, you know, almost, you know, you get promoted, get in there. You deal with the 3G problem. We'll stand on the outside, see what happens, etc. You know, just as a club, just as a selfish, okay, and then you've got a bit of idea moving forward. I know Robin and the board have already confirmed they'll rip up the 3G pitch, etc. But if there was ever that possibility that would still, you know, be potentially possible, and if there was ever a season or ever a time where that actually might fall through and have to happen and a trial be given, etc., and this would be the period. But I must admit, I think the more it goes on, it looks unlikely that we'll get two up. I just can't see it. There's not.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it as an option. And to be honest, the only clubs that I can see really kicking off about it are the ex-Football League clubs. So Notts County and Yeovil are kicking off big time. They just need to understand they're in non-league football now and deal with it. Their protestations. So, like, I think Notts County released a statement last week essentially complaining. I was thinking, there's a pandemic going on. Like, read the room, guys. Like,
yeah.
This isn't about you wanting to get promoted. There's bigger issues at hand here.
Because, like I say, the vote from the National League, which we'd waited ages for anyway, as a club that, unfortunately, we weren't where we wanted to be at the point when it finished. We can all talk about what could have happened with the remaining games, etc. But almost fortunately, we're actually in a position where this emotionally, etc., isn't going to, the outcome of whatever happens isn't going to, you know, put a massive, massive emotional drain or whatever on us either way. When the vote was when the vote was sent out to the clubs, it was emailed to everybody, and you got a great big email chain, and people love a reply all. So clubs were just replying all with their opinions, you know, replying back and forth. And there were just, like you say, there were clubs up there, all Wood Strange one. They don't want the playoffs, you know, null and void. They don't, you know, which is quite interesting. Notts County obviously talk about the fact don't need to rush. You know, the games can be played at some point. Everything like that. You see it again. At what point are you considering that this is going to happen and this is going to... And in the end, there were so many clubs who ended up all just replying back and going, just vote. And when it was actually announced that enough people voted and it had, you know, it hit the majority already, so it didn't matter that the others voted, it was quite a relief, really, because it was actually a silent majority who, fortunately, we were all in the same boat, common sense. And we were just getting on and voting, whereas actually the louder clubs were actually in the minority, and you saw that by the vote. It's going to be really interesting as to nationally what they decide next week. I mean, if it
can I just ask though, with it, is it fair with that voting that you've got every single club in the National League voting that way? Because if you've got between what is it, 21st and below go down, the bottom four go down, don't they? And then the top seven are in with a shout of promotion. then the mid-table, if they all voted to null and void the season, no one go up, no one go down, and that's the majority. Is that fair to the teams that are in the playoff areas or the playoff positions?
It's really strange. I saw the South and North clubs when this vote was originally happening, because what people forget is that each North and South club effectively have a vote each. However, the league as a whole, in the North, they'll have four votes. The South will have four votes. So say half of the South clubs vote promotion, for example, half of clubs vote no. It's two votes each. Meanwhile, in the league, there's 24 votes. So, and that's all, and unfortunately, that's always been the way. We knew that when we first came into the league in the South, and we felt hard to come by, etc. No one's ever raised it. No one's tried to challenge it. No one's tried to change it, etc. So it was quite bizarre watching it all unfold at that point, when everyone was getting upset about what was going to happen, etc., and arguing about the voting system. It's been in place certainly for the last decade, I think. So that was really interesting. I think for the National League, you've all got a vote each. You know, everyone's got different agendas, and everyone's got, you know, finds themselves in different positions, etc. But I don't think it's unfair that every club's got a say in what happens now. I think, to be fair, to the National League's credit, it's probably tried to do the right thing and consult with clubs. But as you've seen, when they consult with clubs, everyone's got a different agenda. You're never going to get a unanimous view from everybody. You know, it's probably led to some of the delays that we've actually come across.
You can argue that it can be unfair in a way. I mean, teams will get a reprieve from relegation if that happens. That the fact that you've got the lights, and it's not being disrespectful, but a team like Chorley that are, what were they, 11 points off safety, 12 points off safety. Yeah. Like, a lot of people considered they was already out of it. I doubt they was going to go on a massive winning streak and win every game and stay up. However, if they get a reprieve next year and they're in this league, then you've got teams like Kings Lynn, who have done well in the Conference North, Willstone, who have robbed the Conference South, and they won't feel the benefits of going up. So it is a tough one.
Yeah, but for me, null and void, everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah.
I think everyone's lost out. All the people who could gain have lost out. All the people that could lose out have gained. I don't know. I know Barrow are 4 points clear at the top, etc. I suppose the season has ended, hasn't it? But I really don't know. I must admit. Like I say, we're not going to be given two options by a National League and then we get to choose one. So it's really such a bizarre situation to be in. You're just sort of sitting there waiting. I mean, Matt James, I don't know what your views on it.
Again, it is so tough. I said last week that you're not going to get one that, you know, everyone's happy with. If you're taking this season as a finished result, and Barrow are the top team, and you're having to fill the Football League for that, obviously Barry missing out, dropping out, then yeah, I suppose that's a solution that for this very strange situation works. Looking at it another way, Barrow were only 4 points ahead. You still had, if you're looking at it with there were still games to play, I don't think they necessarily deserve promotion because there's still so much football left to go. But as you say, it's such a difficult situation. I don't think it's the time to be, you know, thinking too deeply over it. I think the season's done. Sort, you know, get the decision made, whatever it is, and you just have to then look on for the next season and for when football can return.
Well, apologies. I think that's a really good point.
I've just obviously thought, I know it's stupid, but why does the EFL need to fill back up next year to that club?
Yeah, essentially that is another thing. Yeah, do they just play the 23 teams
like this? Do you? Is this the opportunity where we get our three up and you have two relegated next season and three promoted? You know, I don't know.
I think it's another interesting point as well. You know, rather than spend too long on salvaging what is somewhat of a shipwreck of a season now, I think, you know, you've got to try and focus your efforts on next season. Yeah. You know, there's no point in in spending too long on this now. We've got to move forward, and we've all got to move on together as clubs. And I think, to be fair, the majority are. But like Mash and like you other guys are alluded to, there are certain clubs that are digging their heels in and are refusing to give up the ghost as such.
Yeah, but with it in a way as well, sorry, Matt, is just say you got Barrow. They should be going up, and then it's announced next week, you know what, they're not going to go up, everything's null and void, no one's going up, no one's going down. How would you feel as a fan, or even as an owner or someone on the board, where you feel Barrow have done well this season? They probably deserve to be playoffs at least, if it is only 4 points and Harrogate managed to catch them and overtake them. But I think personally they've done quite well, and they probably would have held their own and gone up. I don't know if that would agree with me. But the other point with it is... But what if you get to the... What's that?
I thought they were going to lose in the next five.
No, but with it is, you've got that. Barrow have done really well, the management, chairman, but then next season it goes to it and they finish mid-table. How would you feel as a fan or a management? Because the rewards of league football above are so much greater.
Again, there's bigger fish to fry in terms... I said last week, we will learn a lot about how clubs are run and particularly how their supporters act. You know, these clubs, how they've been digging their heels in, as Matt says, I think they have completely lost sight of what the bigger picture is at this moment in time. Just get on with it. There's football still to come. You know, this isn't the be all. There's much bigger things to be worrying about at this moment in time. So
this is football, isn't it? You know, this is football. We're talking about people's lives being at risk here. You know, this is the bigger picture. This is the most important thing. This is a completely unprecedented situation. And yeah, I know there's been some criticism of how leagues have dealt with it, you know, but you have to give the National League some credit. It's not an easy process, as we've seen, Jeff, with those emails we were looking at and that we've seen the exchanges going back and forth, so many differences in opinions. As we've said time and time again, you're not going to keep everyone happy. And, you know, as much as Barrow were top as well, like, you know, people have alluded to as well, they might easily have lost a couple of games and Harrogate could have taken over. So we might have got in the playoffs. Who's to say that we wouldn't have got in the playoffs if we hit a run of form? So it's all hypotheticals and ifs and buts. But the most important thing is people's health. And like I say, I think now to focus our attention on how we're going to start next season.
Yeah, I think I just got to echo what Matt's saying there, that... if I'm right, with Boreham Wood, so Boreham Wood were the first club to really properly take the ball by the horns and say, end this. This is nonsense. Like, call it off. And I keep coming back to the financial realities of it all for Bromley and for a lot of the non-league clubs. If we are lucky, and I stress that heavily, if we're lucky, football returns. It's certainly not coming back August. Maybe September, if we're lucky, it comes back. And I actually think they've gone about this thing football wider, about wider football community, they've gone about this the wrong way. I'm not convinced we should be looking at how to bring the Premiership back. We should be looking at grassroots and thinking, how do we get that back first? Because clubs can get football on and socially distance because, well, maybe not National League level, we get over 2,000, but clubs certainly, Ryman 1, for example, you're getting is what, 200? That's if you're a well-supported club. So I'm just wondering why we're not... If we're going to think about football coming back, non-league fraternity as a whole could be working together with the FA to say, we'll be the... It's the wrong word to use, but we'll be the guinea pigs at how we can structure football to come back, if at all, this year. My concern is that if we look to next season, which, and again, Matt's right, that should be the focus... No, as far as I'm concerned, no non-league club can restart behind closed doors for a lengthy period of time, not even at our level.
No.
So we really, we just need to really plan and to look at, well, what is the next season looking at? Stop splitting hairs about who goes up and who goes down, which is why I'm saying just send Barrow up and be done with it, because it's a decision. Whether it's the right decision or not, it's a decision to be made and just say, well, you know, everyone else is done. The bigger decision is, do we come back at all this year? Never mind looking at it, because I'm not sure, I'm not convinced. I don't know if what your views are. I don't know if we'll get an entire season next season.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, we were just trying to do this podcast, so you've killed our next episode. But I've got to be honest, I know, completely. I just can't. I just can't see how, you know, the players' contracts, signing players, releasing players, retaining players. At the moment, it appears the FA are keeping with the current retention, which is next Saturday. You inform them with regards to underage players that you want to retain, and then the end of May, you issue your retained list, players that are already on contracts or players that have been offered re-engage for next season. How on earth are you in a position to be able to offer re-engage anybody, and what terms are you offering them, and what start dates and new contracts are you offering them? Because you don't have an absolute clue when the season is starting, and you know, I really can't get our head around. There are numerous conversations about it now, and again, a lot of them are almost fruitless, because you're not working with any actual, you know, facts or knowledgeable action. And I just can't. How would you do it? How would you even let the moment that new football returns, if they try and do it under closed doors, no matter what, that means that your footballs are back to work. So furlough no longer counts. So full expenditure comes back to the business, to the football club. Full expenditure comes back. Those players are playing, that they're doing their job. Yet the income hasn't come back. The pitches aren't open. There's no one in the ground. Just doesn't work. Doesn't work. The sole fact that people are surviving now is furlough and the advancement of this Premier League money. Whenever we do return, I think there's going to be initial, oh wow, you know what? A lot of clubs got through this. This is amazing. It's going to be how many clubs finish that season. Whenever that season starts, I think it's going to really be a case of they've got through, they've managed to start. But actually, how many will finish that season, or the end of that season is when the knock-on effect is going to happen? All the money that has come down from Premier League and stuff is solely advances of money that you usually get in September. You know, what happens in September? What happens in October? That money's gone just to keep the place alive until then. So, yeah.
When would we normally start our pre-season? Early July?
Last week of June, yeah. So players have been coming back for that July, you know, so roughly a month, 4 or 5 week period, first game of the season. So, you know, I think the FA have already started new in September. I think they've only said that, so clubs are already preparing for at least a month's delay, just so people have got it in their mindset. You know, I don't think that September figure is based in any kind of reality or fact. It's just purely A, not to completely scare all of everybody, make sure they still try and fight and hang in there and keep going. I just can't work it out, can you? Mash, obviously, for those of you who don't know, you're a school teacher, head of year, is it?
Yeah, head of year 11.
So your sector's obviously, in our, we probably sit there going, that's probably a good gauge of the government and where the world sits at and the normality of everything going on. But yourselves, you guys don't even know New Year's, end of year, you're that timetable.
Yeah, so obviously we've furloughed all our pupils. We're doing on most schools, we're probably doing what mine's doing, which is online learning at the moment. Sending physical copies of work home for those who don't have internet access and whatnot. But that all aside, looking at schools returning, schools are going to return sooner rather than later. I'm not particularly necessarily happy with that decision, because I don't know how you socially distance in a school, but schools will have to return at some point. I don't want them to, but they will have to, because no one can go to work if schools don't return.
Yeah.
Or the whole, or most of the nation can't, or a majority of the nation. So the question, therefore, will be what schools go back. So what I mean by that is, will it be primary or will it be secondary? And even if they do go back, how many kids can go back? I just kind of get the sense that when schools do return, like everything, it's all a test to see what happens, because there's no guarantee of. There's no guarantee of anyone's safety, because we don't know what's going on, really and truly. So I would be surprised if schools aren't back in some capacity next month, as some kind of to give people respite. Some parents must want to chuck their kids out by now. So to give people respite, try and see, kind of like what Germany and Denmark are doing, where they're kind of opening up a bit to let people go to work and see what happens. And then it's all a guessing game. Because let's say that's June, then we all have a guessing game from about mid-June to some point in July to basically work out, can we return to something approaching normality, or will there be a second spike and we all go back under restrictions of some sort? And it's interesting to see kind of moving from schools and going back or linking it to football. I think in other countries now you're starting to see clubs get ready to let players go back to training in some. So in the same way how clubs are saying, right, players can come back in groups of five, but they can't train together. It's kind of going to work similar to schools in that, right? So it might bring back year one in primary school, but only half of year one can come in and there'll be staggered lunchtime. So everyone's going to have to get used to a new normal of some sort.
It's just another reminder that, like you say, that we're sitting here recording a podcast about football, talking about football and the actual basics of society and education and stuff, haven't even got an answer for it. I feel like we wasted our time actually even trying to figure any of it out. Obviously, we referred to our virtual awards evening that we're going to try and do via Zoom, which is going to be absolutely hilarious. We have done a rehearsal. It's come out okay. On that subject, you voted for your support player of the season?
I have, yeah.
Is it confidential?
Do you know what? Before I answer that, now I'm on this. Now I see what you like to do with the cookie. He's upside down, he's left.
That's why I normally don't go live on video.
I voted for Sam Wood. I think for me there's probably three, maybe four standout choices. And when I was weighing it up, I kind of was like, if it stopped in January, Cheek would have won. I think pretty much everybody would have voted for Cheek. I feel kind of sorry for him because obviously he's had a bit of a dip. He had a bit of a dip in form, but also has essentially played every single game and every single minute. So that kind of to be expected. Coulson is probably our most gifted player. So in that sense, he stands out. And then in the end, I just voted Sam because I was like, who's played pretty much every single game, which was basically him or Cheek. And I don't know, I think Sam's just been really consistent throughout the season. You know what you're going to get with him. He's up and down that left-hand side. And I thought he got better as the season went on, actually. So yeah, in the end, I went for Sam. But I wouldn't be surprised if Cheek or Coulson win.
It is crazy. It is amazing with Sam. When you see, especially when we're doing the goal morning on this day stuff, and you're going back to 2006, 2007, and watching him play for us, and Gareth McCleary on the other wing, and that it is quite amazing. It's quite a football coming, you know, and represent us for so long. And like you say, I'm sure that's probably going to play a part in a lot of people's votes as well, I suppose. You know, the fact, like you say, he's got that history, etc., of us as well. It'd be an interesting one. I must be referred to it earlier. I think we've had over 300 votes via that email. So for those of you who are listening, don't forget to email us your votes. It's spots, SPOTS, at bromleyfc.co.uk to get your vote in. Nash, it's brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully it won't be the last time. Really appreciate that. And, yeah, speak to you soon.
No worries, man. All of you stay safe, yeah?
Cheers, mate. No worries. Oh, that's brilliant. I made a change from being in our dulcet tones.
That was great. That was
very great. Nice.
Always good to speak to him.
Right, where are we now, Matt?
Well, we're going to move on from all of that. And it's not only the first team, of course, that have had their season ended now. The Bromley ladies have as well. And we managed to catch up with manager Steve Payne. Here's what he had to say on all of that.
season so far, or thus far, was we started off the season from August to December unbeaten, which left us high-flying at the top of the table with about 7-8 points in front. After Christmas, we've come back. I think we won our first. Then we drew the next one or two and won a cup game, lost a cup game, and drew our last game, which is, I think we had 3 or 4 games left to play with 5 points ahead, still having to play the first and second team, which they dropped points against each other. So we was going to win the league, but unfortunately, the league has been suspended, so that will never be recorded. This Saturday, we are doing our virtual trophy night, which is we've got the trophies and medals, which is I've got the girls' medals for not as league winners, just champions, because they were champions in their own rights, and they've got their own individual medals. We will be doing that via Zoom. Now, I'm old school, so this is the first thing to me. I have no idea how this is going to turn out. But we've had a test run, us and a couple of the girls, and it works. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, this is Steve Payne, Bromley football manager, ladies, that is, stroke coach. Stay safe, stay clean, wash your hands, stay at home. Thank you.
And a big thank you to Steve for providing us with that. Obviously, a really, really frustrating time for them as well. Obviously, we're doing this podcast over Zoom. They're going to be doing their awards evening over Zoom. I wonder if it'll go as well as this podcast has. Well, actually, they haven't got cookie to put up with, so that's a start.
another shout out to Steve there, obviously, being a key worker. He's on the buses, isn't he?
He is, yeah. So big shout out to him. I think you could hear in the background of some of that audio. I think he was on his break, actually. So still working hard. Big thank you to Stephen and all the fellow frontline workers across all sorts of professions, obviously from all of us. Yeah, real heroes at this time.
Absolutely superb. And they were clearly up there, like you say, and they had a lot to play for towards the end. So like I say, I'm sure they're gutted it's come to the end how it has. But I'm sure they'll have a great time over on Zoom tomorrow night for their presentation awards. I'm sure we always enjoy getting their updates over on Twitter and social media, so I'm sure they'll keep us updated on that. I know it's always greatly appreciated, and it's nice to hear from every part of the football club. I'm sorry, Matt. I was going to say we put in a script that we were going to talk about.
Did, yeah. It's sort of swapped round, hasn't it? I think we had more of a discussion than we ever thought we would, actually, with regards to all of that. But obviously now we await that meeting, like you say, Jeff, next Tuesday, and we await to see what the fallout of all of it is.
No, honestly, I don't know. It brought a different dynamic to the conversation, I think, Mash. I think this Zoom technology about getting boring, and it's actually probably going to allow us to do a lot more of that moving forward, bring fans involved, a bit like a radio show, being able to bring the fans in for certain segments, etc., and maybe there's an opportunity that we can record this live at some point and get fans involved, trying to make the best of both worst situations, etc., and the technology that's available. So it's been a bit of fun experiment, and a big thanks to Mash for joining in on that, and unfortunately Cookie knows how to use it.
Who's now gone, by the way.
Yeah, the weekend is upon us. Tomorrow is Saturday. It'll obviously usually be a match day. We're doing our best to keep everyone entertained.
Well, Saturday's now, as you know, are always about match day replays. Tomorrow we have got the 2007 Kent Senior Cup final for you. That was when Bromley hosted Tunbridge Angels. So that's coming to you live, in quotation marks, 3 p.m. tomorrow. Obviously, depending when you're listening to this. So it'll be Saturday, 3 p.m. The best way to view it is just stay across our website or Twitter, or if you go direct to YouTube, there will be a premiere waiting there for you. It'll go live at 3. There's also a live chat. So make sure you're getting involved with other supporters who are joining the live stream as well. We've got one for you coming tomorrow, and we've also got another one coming next Saturday. So yeah, just keep across our social media and you'll be able to find out when the next ones will be coming along.
Absolutely brilliant. I must admit, over on YouTube, when you're watching it, there is an area on the right-hand side for the chat. And it's always quite good because you've got fans bringing up their own certain memories. And back over on Twitter and stuff, you've got fans taking a photo of their view where they're watching the game. So I know, I think the gaffer Smudgy's been in his garden, yeah, watching it on the kitchen telly. And I think Paul over on Twitter, he's always got a can and he's in front of the telly and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really good to see. A big thank you for everyone who sends in the messages and lets us know that they're tuning in, etc. It's been really good to see. And it's quite nice on a Saturday to sit round and have a watch back at some of the previous games. And like you say, Saturday's a good one against Tunbridge in the Kent Senior Cup. And that was a mad period of time, because if I remember, we also got to the final of the London Senior Cup that year.
That year, yeah. That's correct.
Had the playoff semi-final. Honestly, it must have been something like 5 games in 10 days or something stupid, yeah, like that. And they were proper games, like 2 cup finals, a semi-final, final, the last league game of the season, I think at Boreham Wood, where we might have, could have won the league if Hampton had lost to Slough. But plenty of time to go back on there, I'm sure, as we will do through the archives on this day, etc. Plenty of other things over on social media, James, this week that we've tried to keep people entertained with, and I know there'll be more coming next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got loads going out as much as we can at the minute. As you said, Jeff, there, we've got On This Days. We've got goal mornings every morning, a goal from years gone by coming to you. Also, we've been running a goal of the month competition. So we've gone back through this season, started back way back in July, and we've done a month goal of the month for each month, basically. So the videos for those, we're up to November at the minute. December will be coming to you very shortly. You can go onto the YouTube video and place your vote there, basically. Just leave the name of the goal, and also maybe why you thought that goal was the goal of the month. And then what we'll do is, once we get to the end of the season, we will put each winner from the months together and then do a goal of the season vote. So that'll be interesting to see as well, which one comes out on top there. So yeah, plenty of stuff. The best place to get all of our content is our website, www.bromleyfc.co.uk. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at BromleyFC, head to our Facebook page and also our Instagram account. They're all at BromleyFC if you search from there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Over on the website as well, there's also a box now for Ravens Weekly. For those of you who don't get it, it's a weekly email. It goes out every Monday or Tuesday morning if you forget. We just try and summarise all of the bits and pieces from the week, what's been going on, etc. And I think there's about over 7,000 people that are getting that email. So a big thank you to everybody who does subscribe. But if you haven't, you can head over there and get all the latest updates. That's almost about it. Probably a shout out to listeners, really, in terms of moving forward. We want to keep going with this weekly and keep contact with everyone. And like I say, we've got a great chance to experiment and try new things with this. So it'd be great to hear listeners' ideas on what we can do, what you'd like to hear, what do you want. I know we spoke about possibly getting some former players on board for a couple of interviews, etc. Or maybe we've got the opportunity of doing a bit of a phone in and get fans in and a bit of Q&A. So, yeah, we'd love to hear your ideas. Drop us a tweet, an email, etc. I think that would be really, really useful for us as well. We're trying our best to keep everybody engaged and keep things going. So be really good to know what you guys want, what you want to hear, what you want to see. And we'll do our best to obviously deliver it. Is that everything, guys?
I think it is.
Friday evening, finally. Oh, dear. Okay, brilliant. So, a big thank you. Thanks again to Mash. Thanks again to Cookie. Where's Cookie gone again? Anyway, a big thanks again. A big thank you to Howard and GPM Group as ever for their continued support. It's great, greatly appreciated on the podcast. As ever, if you are listening to this over on iTunes or Spotify or ever, please don't forget to subscribe. You'll always get a little notification when the latest episode is out. And also give us a rating on there for no reason whatsoever. That's it. Thank you very much, guys. And we'll see you again next week. And that's the town where I come from, in Bromley, in Bromley.